Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now, you can download our podcast on iTunes.
As 30,000 of you do, and that's really great. And please continue to send us emails from around the world. We read them all, and we love them all, and it's great. Your comments are interesting, and they really do drive the show, the things
that
you like to hear
about.
We truly answer
as many of them as we can.
Now, we're going to be talking later in the show with Rick Moonen. Rick Moonen is one of the preeminent fish chefs in the country. I would say he and Eric Repair are the two top fish chefs.
Eric Repair is from La Bernadette.
In New York, yeah. They're the two top fish chefs in the country. Now, Rick was at Oceana, a Greek restaurant called Molivos in New York City. He was at the Water Club, and he had his own restaurant called RM, which was doing very well when he was approached to take his restaurant out in Vegas.
Rick cooked me cooked you, because it was your birthday. One of the top 10 meals of my life he made for us at the Water Club.
That was back when I was 29
really
years old.
Spectacular.
And he's a great guy. We've known him for years. He's been a friend. We've barbecued with him, and he's out there in Las Vegas. He's going to come talk to us about what he's doing out there and also an organization that he's involved in, because being a fish chef and being involved in fish today, you need to be really conscious of what's going on in the environment and with the ecology, because, well, I mean, the FDA is coming out with warnings now telling you what kind of fish you can and can't eat and where we should source fish. So you really need to know what you're doing. Plus, being a fish chef is, I mean, it's a very delicate way of cooking, because fish is very unforgiving.
Well, in every restaurant, you put your most talented guy in the fish station.
Yeah.
You always do that.
Well, and fish, I mean, a lot of meat, it can be a little bit forgiving, but you're 30 seconds off in either direction with many fish.
And it's done.
And it's all over.
Say goodbye.
There's more news out of Las Vegas, though. It looks like Joel Robuchon will be opening up in Las Vegas. Now, Joel Robuchon was a 3-star Michelin chef in France. Mm-hmm. And when Joel Robuchon retired in 1996, can you still call it retired if he's coming back now?
Well, sure. Michael Jackson. Funny.
He's not retired yet. They're trying. But when Joel retired in 1996, and he had 3 stars at the time for Michelin, which is the highest rating that you can get in all of Europe, and he stepped outside the business. It was sort of, a lot of people said, you know, the best chef in the world is retiring. And there was universal consensus, or near universal consensus, that he was the best chef in the world. And now here he is coming back. One of the things that was raised when he did retire was, does it make sense to have a Michelin 3-star restaurant? Doesn't make sense anymore to have those super, super high-end restaurants that garner the best stars? They're very, very expensive.
It costs a fortune to run. There's usually 2 or 3 people in the kitchen as a ratio for people in the dining room.
We would go there, and sometimes Mark and I will go to lunch, and lunch at a Michelin, what if we spent $1,000 on lunch or two at a Michelin 3-star in France? Now, yeah, that's right. I said $1,000 for lunch for me and Mark.
You don't have to. If you're a normal human being, you'll only spend $500 or $600.
Right. But if you're really decadent, you can spend $5,000.
Yes.
I mean, we're not at the top of the food chain there. Now, these restaurants are really challenged and really have to reinvent themselves. And some of them, even though they charge that amount of money, I mean, it's sick. You go to these places because you think, well, how could you not make money if you're even moderately busy and charging these prices? Well, when you're there, you realize. I mean, everything is gold and silver and fresh flowers and just everything.
And there's
is beautiful.
There's a $25,000 Gardon for the rum.
Right, for the rum Gardon. Which sort of rum would you like? Can I ride the Gardon home? You know, my God. But in any event, what's interesting is that Joel Robuchon is opening in Las Vegas. And, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me because, honestly, those 3-star Michelin restaurants or restaurants of that ilk, and we don't have restaurants like that in America. We don't have Michelin three-star restaurants in New York. You know, the top restaurants in New York.
We don't know. Guide Michelin is going to come out pretty soon.
Imminently.
We will know soon if there's such thing as a Michelin three-star restaurant in
But it's
in
not the same standard as they will. Even if they do award a restaurant in New York 3 stars from Michelin, it's not going to be the same as the standards they hold the French restaurants to. I don't think. But, you disagree with me on that one.
I think they will be. But, you know, only Guide Michelin knows for sure.
Well, now, the thing is, though, when these restaurants are challenged because it's so expensive to run that no matter what they charge, it seems, they're not extraordinarily profitable. And the way that Michelin three-star chefs make their living there is by the cookbooks and the cult of personality that follows being the best of the best. But it makes perfect sense to open a place like this in Las Vegas because the restaurant itself doesn't need to make money.
Right.
You're in the casino.
The purpose of a restaurant in a Las Vegas casino is to draw respect and people to that casino.
Right. If I can afford to spend $500 on lunch and I'm deciding which hotel to stay at in Vegas, you can entice me to your hotel so that I have dinner at Robuchon and then I go out and drop $500,000. Dollars at Baccarat, who cares if my dinner was at a break even? You know what I mean?
Or worse, who cares if I lost money on my dinner? And again, that's how a lot of casino restaurants work. And I think that it's actually a very, very good plan of action for a great casino to have a great restaurant in it. Again, like Francis said, if you want to attract the wealthiest of the wealthiest, what do? You put the best restaurant in the country in your casino.
You know what? I just got a great idea, Mark. You know where I'm going, don't you?
I think that I might.
We own one of the best restaurants in the state of New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
If we put slot machines downstairs,
they'll arrest us.
Oh yeah, there is that whole arrest.
The whole illegal gambling in New Brunswick.
I still do like the idea, though, Mr.
There's a river in New Brunswick, though. Maybe we could go out in the center of the river.
I think you have to be out in the ocean there. But I think that it's very interesting. You also have another Michelin three-star chef who's going out there, Guy Savoy. Mm-hmm. That's G-U-Y-S-A-V-O-Y. Those French don't know how to spell anything. Guy Savoy, another Paris heavyweight and holder of Michelin three stars, may come close. His Las Vegas entry is on the second floor of the new Augustus Tower at Caesar's Palace. And that's set to open early in 2006. And Mr. Savoy's son, Frank, has arrived to oversee it. That's Frank, F-R-A-N-C-K. To paraphrase Steve Martin, those French have a different word for everything.
Isn't that Frank?
Yeah, as in Cabernet Franc. So Joel Robuchon's restaurant is going to be called Joel Robuchon at the Mansion 9, and if you want to drop a ton of money, you can go there.
Yep.
I'm sure it's going to be fabulous, fabulous.
These restaurants will not be inexpensive. I'm sure that they'll be some of the most expensive restaurants in the country. First of all, because a casino restaurant usually is very expensive because what they want to do is they want to give you a comp at the restaurant if you're a really high roller.
What?
And a comp at an expensive restaurant is worth more than a comp at an inexpensive restaurant.
The other thing that's changed out in Atlantic City, out in Las Vegas, is what they used to do is they used to have a lot of cheap food, sort of all-you-can-eat buffets, to entice you there with quantity instead of quality. And they still have those things out there.
Right.
But what these high-end restaurants are doing...
The super premium places.
What they're doing is they're trying to self-select. They're trying to attract the wealthiest clientele. And if you're the kind of person who says, oh, I would never pay $100 for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I'm not going there.
Right,
exactly.
They're not chasing you.
They're looking for the high rollers. And when they get those high rollers, that's when they can put all that. I mean, those casinos are just beautiful with the stuff they put in there. Well, and the other thing is these restaurants are... This restaurant's even departure even for Las Vegas. In the over-the-top Las Vegas, this goes even further. In Robuchon, the lighting is subtle. The air conditioning is less overpowering than Las Vegas because that's the thing in Las Vegas. It's always chilly, chilly everywhere. And the tables are well-spaced. Lots of real estate, which is one of the hallmarks of a three-star restaurant and any great restaurant, I think. And check this out. Only 40 people can be seated in the square dining room.
Wow.
A dozen more on a side terrace, and 10 in a small private room.
So what's going to happen is you're going to have to be a high roller just to get into the restaurant.
Exactly. 60 people, and, they don't, again, you can't make money on 60 people. It's not designed, it's designed to lose money. So here you have one of the most expensive restaurants in the country that's going to lose money on every dinner, and they don't care.
And it's going to have 60 people, 80 people, 100 people working there every day.
It's a really amazing, and... Well, Mark and I are going to go next summer out in Las Vegas, and we'll tell you how it is. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we are here with our guest today. Our guest is an old friend of ours. He's not that old, really, but he is a friend of ours for a long time, a guy named Rick Moonen, who is chef of his own restaurant out in Las Vegas. He's originally from New York, where he sort of cut his teeth in a number of different restaurants. He's cooked some of the best meals that I've ever had. And we welcome to the show Chef Rick Moonen.
Rick, hey, thanks very much.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. Las Vegas, huh? You abandoned the Big Apple. Why?
Ah, because the opportunity came my way. They came up to me after I opened my own restaurant in New York called Restaurant RM.
Mm-hmm.
About a month and a half in, you know, we're getting all these reviews and everything. It's all going well. And somebody that I knew came walking up to me who was working with Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas and said, would you be interested in opening up a seafood restaurant in Mandalay Bay? And I took about one-fifth of a second to answer. Certainly. Absolutely. You know?
Uh-huh.
And about 2 years after that moment, I had my name on a restaurant in Mandalay. It's awesome.
How come you didn't decide to do the bi-coastal thing that so many New York chefs have done? You actually closed your restaurant in New York City to open in Vegas.
That's correct. Well, I've got 16,000 square feet here in Las Vegas. It's two floors. It's two levels. It's
That's
also
huge.
It's gigantic. It's unbelievable. It's the biggest opportunity in my career. It's incredibly exciting. It's two levels. You know, the overall... restaurant is called RM Seafood.
Mm-hmm.
Soon to be changed over to RM Seafood by Rick Moonen, because everybody's asking what's RM stand for. So we're clarifying.
I actually figured that out, Rick.
Well, you're better than a lot. So, you know, actually in the beginning I was considering doing both, to be honest with you. But then when I came out here and saw the space, realized the magnitude of it, the lower level is called R Bar Cafe. Casual, 250 seats. Huge raw bar, seafood display, live lobster tanks, a gigantic bar with three plasma screen TVs, 200-odd some other seats. You know, you can get plateaus, crab cakes, all sorts of casual stuff. Upstairs is our fine dining restaurant, 85 seats, where we can really deliver a fine dining experience. Extensive wine list, a beautiful lounge with big white leather chairs, a mahogany bar, a couple of rooms for private parties. I said, you know what? Every restaurant needs... the chef to be there. I mean, of this magnitude, you know,
right.
if I'm bringing you in and asking you to spend your hard-earned money,
mm-hmm.
you know, the prices I need to charge in the desert, then I'm going to be here. I'm going to greet you. I'm going to make sure your experience is fantastic from the moment you walk into the moment you leave.
You know, you just bring up a good point, Rick. You do happen to be serving seafood in the desert.
That's correct.
That's
here's my answer to that.
Uh-huh.
We're 1 hour away from L.A., where I get an awful lot of my seafood from. You know, a lot of them I have direct sources. You know, Maine lobster. I don't ship it out. It doesn't get shipped to California and then back here. You know, why not just stop by here on your way?
Uh-huh.
So, but that's 1 hour away in New York City.
Do they use parachutes on their way to California? So?
Exactly. The boxes are floating down, and we catch them. Good thing is there's a lot of sand. But the reality of it is it takes 2 hours to get, you know, fresh seafood that just caught off of Montauk into New York City. So, that, you know, that's twice as long as it takes to get so my seafood shipped to me, and flown to me from L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, planes are landing constantly at McCarran Airport here, and I get delivery 7 weeks, 7 days a week, and I don't have any freshness problems here. So, and we're the guys here to go to.
You know, not to stroke you, Rick, but you did cook... You did cook one of the best meals I ever had in my life. I don't know if you remember, but you were at the Water Club, and I stopped in with a bunch of friends from a club that we all belong to called the Red Meat Club, and it was my 29th birthday.
Yeah, it was. I got to tell you.
And you cooked me a 10-course meal. 7 of the courses I actually remember, and they were amazing.
That's awesome.
Actually, both I and my wife Jennifer were at that meal, and she said to say hello, Rick. And she said, and it really was a spectacular, spectacular meal.
Those are my formative years. You should come out now and check out what we're doing. It's crazy. I swear.
Don't invite me twice. And we also dined at RM in Manhattan. And you sort of made your name as you're the fish guy.
Yep.
I mean, in the whole country, you and Eric Repair are the fish guys.
That's right. Yep. We were the two guys in town. We were two fish in town. There's a lot more seafood restaurants that have opened up since those days. But
somebody had to fill the void when you left, man.
Yeah, big shoes are left somewhere in Manhattan.
But fish, I mean, now for those of you who aren't in the business, I mean, fish is a particularly difficult area and a very specific, you know, guys who cook fish, that's where you really show your mastery of subtlety, and it's a very difficult. I mean, you go wrong with fish by 30 seconds in either direction, and you've really gone wrong.
Some fish, yes. Fish, no. You know, it all depends on their oil content, blah, blah, blah. You know, actually, I'm writing a cookbook called Seafood Without a Doubt. It should be out in 2007. And it addresses this. Now, I want everyone in America to feel comfortable going out, purchasing seafood, bringing it home, and cooking it home. Like, I think some 90-some-odd percent of fish that's consumed in the United States is consumed in food establishments, not at home. And I hope to be able to...
But Rick, the problem we have there, and I deal with this problem in my home with my family. I don't want to buy seafood in the ShopRite and bring that home. It doesn't smell fresh, it doesn't feel fresh, and it doesn't taste fresh.
Yeah, well, that is a problem in many areas, which is why there's going to be canned tuna recipes in this book. I mean, this isn't going to be your fancy schmancy, put it on the coffee table and don't even try to do one of those recipes because you can't type of books. You know, this is a book that's accessible to every single person. I mean, there's going to be crab cakes in there, things that are going to be more challenging, but it's not going to be just made up of, you know, like those beautiful pictures that you wish.
The Dover sole that nobody ever sees except in a fancy restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, I mean, you know, people can get mussels and salmon and stuff. You know, I'm trying to target it to not one particular part of the United States, but everybody.
I also think there are a lot of barriers to people at home actually cooking fish because, you know, you need to have a certain understanding of different kinds of fish, and you can't think of, you know, fish like beef. There are so many different ways to look at it and very different ways to cook it based on what you have. And I want to talk more with you about that in just a moment. Our guest today is Rick Moonen. He's owner of RM Restaurant in Las Vegas, Nevada, and the author of Seafood Without a Doubt, a new cookbook that's due out in 2006. And we'll be talking more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and our guest today is Rick Moonen. He's the executive chef and owner of Restaurant RM out in Las Vegas, Nevada, and in many great seafood restaurants in New York, including RM in New York. And he's known as one of the foremost experts in the country on cooking fish. And, you know, it's funny, Rick, well, we source our fish directly at the fish market, and, you know, we'll be there at 2 o'clock in the morning on a random Thursday a.m. very early. And one of the things that is most interesting to us is to see all the different ethnic groups of people there buying all different sorts of fish. You know, the Koreans and all sorts of Asian people and Hispanic people and Italian people all buying different fish and cooking it very differently. I think that's one of the barriers to entry. You know, if you get the wrong fish and you don't know exactly what to do with it, you can really make a dog's bed of it, don't you think?
Absolutely. You know, that's the whole thing. Even myself, who's been in the industry for a very long period of time, you know, years, you know. I'm really a young guy.
We'll put that on our website. How many years?
I'm a young guy. But the reality of it is, you know, people have to be comfortable with what they're bringing home, especially when it comes to seafood. So, you know, I go to the market, and I learn every single time I go there.
Yeah.
You know, there's always a species of fish, and I'm like, what's that?
Yeah.
You know, and people look at me like, you're supposed to know this. You know, there's so many different unexplored species out there as far as cuisine is concerned to me. And so if it's strange to me, I can only imagine someone that's, you know, a little bit more timid about it cooking at home.
There are a lot of fish in the sea, as it were.
Oh.
So, appreciate that.
Oh, my.
So, Rick, as a home cook. What are the fish that you think are easier to cook and to
cook? Well, I think people are very comfortable with broiling fish. I know that just because of what I grew up with. I grew up in a large family, seven people. We were Catholic. You know, we eat fish every Friday. That was mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom would just like stick fish on a you know like a cookie sheet. You know, lather it up with butter and salt and pepper and throw it under the broiler. So, you know, so flat fish are very good that way, you know. And if, you know, you go to the market and you try to get to know the fishmonger. If there's a fishmonger, if there's somebody standing behind it, you can start to have a conversation with them, you know. And you just try to find out what's freshest, what they're recommending. And a lot of times they'll even give you cooking suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I want to recommend around here. There's a guy named Matty at the East Brunswick Fish Market, and we see him at the fish market, you know, every night. And you can either buy fish from purveyors or you can buy it yourself in the market. And the guys who are getting out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and going to the market, there is nobody more knowledgeable than Matty, and he's full of suggestions and he knows what's on the market. When we come back from the news, we're going to be talking with Rick Moonen about how to source fish responsibly as well as fish that's tasty. And it's quite an interesting and difficult thing to do. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Our guest is Rick Moonen, owner of RM Restaurant in Las Vegas, Nevada. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or just through restaurantguysradio.com. You can also download our podcast from iTunes. We were just talking to Rick Moonen about buying fish and how we buy fish. And I'll tell you what I was about to say is how I buy my fish when I go to the store, when I'm going to my fishmonger, is not so much by what fish I'm looking for. I go to the fish store or my fishmonger or even any place where I purchase fish, and I look to talk to somebody, and I look to buy the freshest fish, the best fish, the most interesting fish that'll fit my evening, rather than necessarily go there with a preconception.
What do you think about that strategy of buying fish, Rick?
That's exactly how I do it. Actually, that's how I'm building my book. You know, I go to the market and I just see what they have at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and we'll grab a bunch of those. You know, if you're actually at a market and they have whole fish, you know, you look into the eyes, you look at the gills, you know, and if they let you touch it, you see how firm the flesh feels. You know,
and what should we see in the eyes when we're buying a whole fish?
They should be clear. You know, they shouldn't be sunken into the head. Mm-hmm. They should be like, some of them have more boogie eyes than others, but if you look at them, it looks like they're looking right back at you. They should be clear.
And if we can look at the gills, what are we looking for?
Gills, generally speaking, should be non-slimy, sticky. Okay, I hate to use the word, but that's the reality. You know, and they should be, you know, bright red. If they're bright red and look like a comb, you know, you can see individual parts of it, that's pretty darn fresh, because that's the first part to start to deteriorate on a fish.
You know, what Rick and both Rick and Mark were talking about before, it's, you know, we hear the term often. We say restaurants and at home, people are looking to be more market-driven. And that's exactly what they were talking about, is exactly what we're talking about. It's going to the fish market and seeing what's fresh and deciding what you'll have for dinner that night or what you'll cook in your restaurant that night based on what's in the market. That's market-driven.
Frequently, we'll have someone come into our restaurant, and Rick, I'm sure this is the case for you as well, is somebody will come into the restaurant and they'll say, well, I'm planning a party in 3 weeks, and I want to have sea bass on the menu. And my response to them always is, well, yes, perhaps we'll have sea bass for you that evening, but if I go to the market and the sea bass doesn't look good, I'm not getting you sea bass just because, you know, that's what we preconceived of. If the sea bass doesn't look good, we'll find a comparable fish that is good.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. You know, we're still working with wild products. You know, if you were getting your seafood from the Gulf and you had your menu printed in gold, guess what? You're in trouble.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
it's a hurricane.
And
yeah.
I also think that you know, if you're the beef tenderloin you're going to be able to get. You know, I think with fish we need to be a little more market driven.
Absolutely. And not all fish are created equal. You know, I mean, there's a lot of fish that I do not serve on my menu here in Las Vegas because it's just not sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Now. I was going to ask you about sustainability. You're very active, and we talk a lot about shopping sustainably, about sourcing products sustainably, because, you know, I mean, and with seafood, it's very difficult for people to keep track of what exactly is a way to buy responsibly, what fish we should avoid. And you're very involved in the ocean, keeping the oceans alive for our children. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Certainly. First of all, people can find out. They can log on to a website called the Seafood Choices. It's at www.seafoodchoices.com. You know, and there's also, and they'll be happy to give you like a little pocket card that'll tell you what you can enjoy and what you should avoid.
I actually got their newsletter today.
Okay, so yeah, so I've been actively involved with Seafood Choices. Actually, I was one of the founding chef members of Seafood Choices. And they're kind of a clearinghouse for a lot of environmental groups, so they have updated material all the time. You know, because, you know, today it might be cool to be eating this fish, and then, you know, next year it's not. You know, for instance, we just had a big breakthrough with caviar, you know, the Caspian mm-hmm. caviar, beluga, sturgeon. You know, it's been so overfished for so many years. You know, I mean, 90%, I think it depleted 90% its population in the last 20 years. That's just the beluga sturgeon. You know, there's also cerugin, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But we continue to be the number one importer of beluga caviar in the United States. And just recently there's been a ban placed on beluga caviar, which is a big triumph.
It is. I mean, the Caspian caviar has been so overfished.
Here's a fish that's been around since dinosaurs were roaming the earth. Mm-hmm. And we're on the brink of pushing it over till it's commercially extinct, which is just insane and irresponsible. You know?
Well, one of the things that people don't realize, I think, is that because of advances in technology and our ability to efficiently fish out, literally fish out entire schools of fish and entire species of fish,
right.
And because of advancements in shipping, you know, it used to be that, you know, the fish, because it's boiled relatively quickly, you would only, you know, the area where you could sell it had to be close to where you fished it. Well, now you can send anything across the world in 24 hours, and that's a good thing in a way. But there's also a responsibility that comes with that as a consumer, and especially as a chef, because we have a lot of chefs and restaurateurs who listen to the show. We're not talking about some pie in the sky, maybe one day things will go extinct. We're talking about pushing things to the very brink of extinction, where they're 5 years away.
The sturgeon in the Caspian Sea, and I have a statistic here from a recent Newsday column, that has declined by 90% of in their population from 1980 to 2000.
Yep.
90%. That means there are 10% of what there were. That's
and probably even lower than that. As we
well, that's at 2000. So yeah. we've continued to overfish these fish.
Yeah, because we're very close to saying goodbye to beluga.
Because it's so valuable.
So what do you do as a chef, Rick? I mean, when people say, oh, we want caviar, how do you deal with that as a chef and an owner of a restaurant?
Well, I mean, there's good news for people that love caviar because there's a growing selection of American caviars, things produced here, you know, from relatives of sturgeon or sturgeon themselves on the East Coast in the Pacific. There's a white sturgeon that's being farmed and has been farmed for a long time now, and the quality of the roe, the caviar that comes out of it, is fantastic.
There,
you know, I mean, really, you know, there's no need to, like, say, oh, my God, I can't, I'm addicted. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Try these.
Or what about...
We're using a company that we found for some American sturgeon called Tsar Nikolai.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
Really spectacular,
really,
spectacular,
I mean,
fish eggs.
You close your eyes. You're eating at least Ocetra caviar. It's flavor, palate, profile, everything. It's all there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
I agree completely. Well, talk to us about, I mean, a fish that was very popular around here that a lot of restaurateurs took off their menus was the Patagonian toothfish or Chilean sea bass.
Chilean sea bass.
Talk to us about that.
Oh, well, here's another fish. It's gone through a certain cycle where it's so good, it's so easy to cook. Anybody can cook. You could overcook this fish by a half an hour.
That's
it's still going to be good because it's got so much of those omega-3 fatty acids in its flesh. I mean,
such a moist fish.
Yeah, I mean, and you can fry it, broil it, saute it. You can any style of cooking can be applied to Chilean sea bass. But unfortunately, that popularity brought it to a situation where it's really heavily overfished. A lot of it is being illegally traded. A lot of what comes into this country has not been properly, you know, landed, you know, through the regulations that are in place upon it. I mean, we're talking about the Antarctic. It's not just the coast of Chile, which is like almost an entire continent anyway.
Right.
But you just keep going south, and that's where these animals, or these fish, you know, live and breathe, you know, or whatever. But they, unfortunately, it's bringing such a great price because of its popularity that we're basically loving it so much we're fishing it to death.
Are you surprised when you see it on a high-end menu for somebody who should know better?
Listen, man, I'm talking to you live from Sin City here. All right? It's still all over the menus here.
Right.
You know, it's just wrong. But, you know, me, I got a big mouth. I'm going to make a difference. I mean, this is my goal in life, is to make a difference out here in Las Vegas because... Okay, people landing here, you know, to have a good time. They've got the hedonistic attitude. Good for that. You know, and I'm all for it. Go for it. Have a great time. But me, you know, chefs who are living here, who are food professionals, who need to be responsible, because our choices make a huge difference. And to anybody listening to this program right now, don't fool yourself into thinking you're just one person. Every decision you make has an impact on the ocean.
Yep.
So, you know, you just be responsible and, and talk about it and ask questions. You know, when you go into a fish store or something, you know, ask them where this is from, how is it caught, you know, make them think, because, you know, they need to know the answers to those questions. And if they don't, and if everybody starts asking, they're going to have to find out.
And, you know, that's a very good point, because, you know, I mean, sometimes you feel stupid as a customer. You go in and you say, oh, where is this from? Why do you have Chilean sea bass on your menu? You know, I would prefer to go to a restaurant that doesn't have that. And the waiter may not know the answer, and the owner may not know the answer. But if they hear the question enough times, they're going to find out the answer.
Exactly.
You know,
and if you're one of those restaurant owners that's listening to this program, or these chefs that listen to this program, you've got to change the way you buy. You have to change the way you buy so that our kids can try Chilean sea bass.
And a tremendous resource for you is seafoodchoices.com. Seafoodchoices.com is where you can go, and it is somewhat complicated to figure out what is, you know, between farm-raised and wild, what is a responsible thing to buy and not, but there's plenty of great seafood out there, and very often the best-tasting seafood is the seafood that is responsible to buy. Our guest today is Rick Moonen. He's chef owner of RM Restaurant out in Las Vegas, Nevada. He's one of the top fish chefs in America, and he is also championing responsible harvesting of our oceans, and we'll be talking with him more in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants, and also of The Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest today is our old friend Rick Moonen. Rick is one of the top seafood chefs in the country. He is the owner of RM Restaurant, soon to be RM Restaurant, Seafood by Rick Moonen. Is that what we're going to call it when the name change comes?
Actually, it's called RM Seafood as an entity. Upstairs is Restaurant RM, downstairs is R-Bar Cafe. It's very confusing. Just remember RM, Mandalay Bay, come by and eat. That's all right. All you have to remember.
That's cool. And you're also, and Rick is also working on a book, Seafood Without a Doubt, which will help you cook seafood at home, which is something that a lot of people are intimidated about. And when does that come out, Rick?
Probably 2007, late 06, early 07.
Now, in the spirit of full disclosure, we should let people know that we've known each other for many years, and we were once in a lunch club that had nothing to do with fish whatsoever.
No, it wasn't.
You're not averse to meat, are you?
No, meat is good.
Yeah.
All food is good. You know, I got flung into being a seafood chef. You know, I was at the water club, okay, and there was a lot of seafood being served there for sure, but there was quite a bit of meat as well. And then I went to Oceana, where I was the partner for 8 years. You know, now that was exclusively seafood, and that's really where I kind of made my name.
Uh-huh.
So everybody sees me as as the seafood guru guy, you know, savior of the poor, you know, over exploited fish out of the ocean. But the reality is, I love meat too. You know, let's not kid ourselves.
Well,
and the Red Meat Club was a blast.
At the Red Meat Club picnic, Rick, I have seen you cooking steaks, so I know for a fact that you are a meat lover.
That you've been cheating on fish. You know, I want to ask you, one of the things we talk about in this show, and one of the things we work on in our restaurant all the time, is to try and buy not just seafood, but to buy sustainably and to buy locally and to buy from small farmers and keep them on the farm. I mean, do you think that's... I mean, important in all areas of food, vegetables, meat, fish, in cuisine today, especially in restaurant cuisine today?
Absolutely. I mean, there's better and worse ways of farming. There's, you know, there's as far as, meat and vegetables, you know, there's the produce. I mean, you get some pretty nasty stuff. I always try to avoid genetically engineered foods because I just don't believe in it. That scares me.
Yeah.
I don't want a second head growing out of my head, my neck. You know, one's enough to deal with. There's enough noise coming out of the one that's there right now.
You don't need to be a two-headed monster.
Yeah.
No way.
But again, when it comes to seafood, it's so crucial. It's so critical because people think that that ocean's beautiful. Look at it. You're only looking at the surface. What's down below and what we've been doing, we as a population, is an atrocity. You know, and all the problems in the ocean started on the land. We did it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody seems to blame, the tuna because of methyl mercury. But guess how that tuna got methyl mercury in it?
Right.
It's the coal-burning plants on land. And we can, and there are solutions, Our government just doesn't do anything about it.
You know, one of the things that I think that Rick points out is that when you look at ideas of conservation, ideas of stewarding the land and responsible stewardship of the land, you look at an agribusiness farm and an agribusiness swine farm, and you look at it and it smells bad and it pollutes the water if you're in town, it smells awful, and you can see what's happened, and you can see the pollution of it. But you know what? You look at I was in Ireland recently, and you look at the Irish Sea toward England, where they've been dumping radioactive waste, on the Irish Sea forever, and it's just a terribly, terribly polluted ocean. And it looks the same, because you're looking at the surface, and it's very deceptive. And we need to be smart, don't you find that there's a difference there because you can't see it?
Absolutely. Yeah, then that's the scary part. Everybody just feels as though things are cool because of the way it appears. And another problem is that in our country, you don't have people that live in any one area for extended periods of times, like hundreds of years, like Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to people up in British Columbia, the First Nations. Those are the Indian, population. They prefer to be called First Nations, and that's fine with me. And I sat down and I spoke with them, and they've been there forever. They've been living off of the water, And I was talking to them about farmed salmon, the salmon farms on the Pacific. And these are Atlantic salmon that don't even belong in the Pacific waters, and the damage that they've done, the amount of effluent that comes from these farms, it blankets the base of the ocean floor, suffocating, natural oyster and clam beds, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just, it brings tears to your eyes.
There's a reason that the great chefs of the country, and Rick, I'll include you in that list, that the great chefs of the country are leading this charge to clean up our oceans and to clean up our farms. And the reason is that's how we get the best product, and that's how we get the best product forever. The great chefs know this, and they know that it's all about the products that they start with. If you start with crap, you're going to end up with crap. If you start with great product, you're probably going to end up with a great product.
You get a better chance.
Exactly.
Well, and the other thing is, when you're talking about what we talk about on the show all the time, and if you eat well. And you do, and so you do well by eating well, but you also do good by eating well. And having good taste is really politically important. And having good taste and not accepting mediocre food and agribusiness food and terrible food is really a revolutionary concept. And it can help you to make a stand to make the world a better place.
No question.
Hey, Rick, thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
You've been great.
It's swell to have you.
We're
going to put up on our website, we're going to link you to how to get to Rick's restaurant, where you can go visit him when you go out in Las Vegas, and how to buy his book as soon as it comes out. We're going to put that up on our website as well, which is restaurantguysradio.com. And we're also going to link you to the Seafood Choices Alliance, where you can go and find out more and subscribe to their newsletter and find out more about how to actually do good yourself in buying fish. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Thank you, guys.
I'm coming out there soon.
I look forward to it.
All right.
And Mark, when we go out there, we have to have dinner before we go to the to the gaming tables.
Exactly.
Because I've seen you, we could lose our money, all of it. You could lose mine.
I don't even care about food when I'm at a gambling table.
I will always remember the favorite thing that Mark. The only time Mark ever said this to me was at a gaming table when he said, "Give me $50 right now." Anyway, that was Rick Moonen. He is a friend of ours, a great chef, and probably one of the top two chefs in America about cooking fish. And that was a pretty interesting little segment we had on that. We'll be talking more in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest today was Rick Moonen, one of the top American chefs with regard to seafood in America, and a really swell guy.
Early in the show, we were talking about that Red Meat Club that we belong to with a lot of great chefs.
10 years. Lunch club that met for 10 years.
A lot of great restaurant professionals, and you've heard many of them on the show over the last little bit since we've been doing the show. And one of the things I remember is that there was a Red Meat Club where David Page and Rick Moonen cooked all the food for the whole picnic, and they made a couple of really spectacular things. One of them, home fries sautéed in foie gras fat.
That's right. Home fries. That's home fries in basically duck fat, duck liver fat.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe I can't begin to tell you how good it is. First of all, duck fat is a great way to sauté potatoes as far as flavor-wise, and that was something I learned that day. And then to one-up that by using melted foie gras to cook home fries, you've never had anything better in your life.
If you ever cook duck at home, and duck is not the easiest thing in the world to cook, but it can be very rewarding, save the fat.
And it should render a lot of fat. If you're roasting a duck,
you can pull it out with one of those syringe kind of things, or let it settle to the top in a measuring cup. And saving that fat, it keeps for a few days in the refrigerator.
It keeps for a long time in the fridge.
And, boy, it's delicious to saute up some vegetables in that. To cook anything in that, to fry anything in that, absolutely amazing.
Remember one of the other great things we had there? The carpet baggers? You want to tell everybody what a
carpet
bagger is? Carpet
baggers, when you have a nice big thick steak, and you basically cut the steak in half, and you put some raw oysters inside the steak, and then you seal up the steak again, and you grill it, and you have the oysters inside the steak.
You let the oysters kind of cook inside that steak?
Not for the faint of heart. You have to sort of be one of those guys who likes raw oysters as well as a steak. Absolutely delicious, though. Absolutely delicious.
Very interesting and delicious combination that you would think, you know, oysters and steak, what are you thinking about? But again, if you like oysters and you like steak, it's a really interesting way to prepare them.
And so there you have your casual barbecue restaurant guy's style.
How to turn up the volume on your casual barbecue. A little foie gras butter for your potatoes, some oysters to stuff into your steaks, and there you go. You're flying first class now.
But they have to be fresh oysters. They They can't be
not
anything
from a can.
But fresh oysters. You got to shell them yourself.
That's it. You got to shuck them yourself.
Yeah, nobody's doing this, Mark. But if you want to do it, you should go visit Maddie in East Brunswick at the East Brunswick Fish Market and ask him about... fresh oysters.
And ask
really
him
great.
To shuck them for you and then run home.
Yeah, exactly. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.